This week on RSPB Update, the Lore Diggers assemble to discuss Moya. Moya has been around for centuries, but only recently has become one of RuneScape's key characters. We profile her rise and discuss how her character has evolved through RuneScape's 6th Age. This is RSPB Update, episode 977, recorded Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Queen of the Wilderness. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we're doing something a little bit different. This week, we're bringing out of the back cabinet the Lore Digger series back. And of course, Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us on this Lore Diggers panel is Zerdones.
Hi there, ready to dig.
Resident clan quester, lore aficionado. You own the Master Quest cape yet?
Oh yeah, I've had it for ages.
Nice. And Avernick, who you remember from our quest coverage in the past, and of course, probably best known for in RS getting the Ark into game. So, welcome, Avernick.
I heard the word lore and I showed up.
Yeah. And I appreciate you, Zerdones, for mentioning Moya, because I had some different ideas of potentially people we could go with on this one. But I think Moya makes a lot of sense given where we were at with Zamarigal last time we gathered to do one of these. So
yeah, that was sort of my thinking. Like, when you asked me, I was like, man, I really wish I knew where the story was going, because that would be sort of the best thing to do, is sort of something that ties into that. But I mean, Moya is sort of the last big story beat we had. Mm-hmm. So that seems like the next best thing.
Yeah, and I want to point out that these Lore Digger panels are based on our interactions and interpretations of the lore only, and should not be taken as gospel, because I think we got the Zamarigal one pretty wrong in terms of what we were thinking might be happening in that storyline next with that.
I think we probably always will.
Yeah, we're not canon, in other words, right? Like,
Yeah. But before we get too far down the track, show notes can be found at update.show. We also have our Discord at update.show/Discord, and the Friends chat is in-game at Bits Bytes. I am Sheen12088. Tanis can be found at Tanis79. Zerdones and Avernick are just the wonderful folks without numbers in their name. Zerdones with an X. And I think everybody else can figure out how to spell Avernick from that point.
It's so written a lot in the game.
It is. And before we continue on, just a big, huge thank you to all of our experienced tier Patreon members for allowing us to do what we do here each and every week. Without them, the podcast would not be possible. They form the keystone of that. So with that, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Ricky A., Rippeth, Runestar, and the Naked Captain. All right. So I just want to say before we begin this that as this is a Lore Digger special, we will be going through quests and lore from previous updates. So if there's parts of the lore that you might not want to have spoiled for you that are relating to the Majorat or Moya in general, this is your warning for that. But we're going to be fairly loosey-goosey and free-flowing with the discussion on this week's episode. So Moya is interesting because she's half human, half Majorat, and the daughter of Lucien, which I don't know. Do we have any other human Majorat hybrids in game that we're aware of?
Okay. None that we know of. And we were talking about this a bit in pre-show, but how Moya came to exist is one of the more interesting unanswered questions about her. Because it's a question that's raised in universe a few times.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and I want to know, like, did she get like the, like white DNA treatment, cloning this, and you know all that kind of stuff, or was it just traditional?
Traditional
Lucian lit some candles, like Lucian put on a Barry Manilow record.
Yeah, a little Barry White.
So basically, you're wondering if there was, you know, something more elaborate involved technology wise, or if there was, you know, RuneScape's first XXX lore.
Well, but I mean, but there is a reason that I was wondering all this, right? Because we know the Majora are small in number,
yeah,
and they've had a hard time like keeping their numbers up. So I was thinking, was this some kind of like experiment or a happy accident?
Right. and I really appreciate you asking that, because that's a question that we do need to dive into on some of this, because this has been a character that was sporadically used up until extinction. And, you know, more and more she gained prominence throughout the Six Age arc. So I think the best way to start this is just, you know, a brief background of Moya in terms of what she had in game, how she factored into extinction and where we're at right now. And this is going to be your 5-minute history of the character. We already mentioned Lucian's daughter, first mentioned in the Temple of Ikov quest, which of course goes way back, 2002. And, you know, fun fact on this, I remember doing Temple of Ikov and, you know, reading through the Lucian lore way back in the day on RS2, not RS Classic, and remembered that, oh, wow, this is actually interesting. And I always knew after that that the Majorat in particular was going to be an interest area of mine in game. And I feel like the writing back then created this entire mysterious race, but of course over time we learned more and more, and we know, you know, the first fact we know, despite how Moya is portrayed in game, she's very old. Her time dates back to the previous ritual of rejuvenation in the Fourth Age. We don't know exactly what year, but I know it's hundreds of years at least that that are ages on this.
She's at least 500 years old.
And, you know, keep
know in mind, she's 500.
Older than a human, younger than a Majora.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, because, you know, we saw the ritual of rejuvenation in the Fifth Age, and she was around for the one before that, which was a long, long time ago in a land far, far away. So, and this gets to what you were talking about, Tanis. We don't exactly know how she was created, but the entire thing that has been Moya's driving arc since the Sixth Age has been ever increasing the role that she would play in the game storyline. And I imagine you could go, you know, to the Lore Council or maybe even Mod Jack and, you know, ask, you know, how was Moya created? And you might get some sort of answer to it. That'd be a good thing to put to a lore Q&A if they ever resume those. But I think at the end of the day, we're kind of just going to leave that mystery aspect here, unless you guys want to, you know, kind of dive into a bit of the history of her, of how she came to be later on that. But continuing,
One thing that I wanted to bring up is it doesn't exactly answer how she was created in a mechanical sense, but one thing I noticed while I was doing some reading to prep for this episode is how, like, her existence sounds very similar to the Nihil, which is Nex's race, who were created by Zaros, basically taking unexisting species, and there were four that he used, and combining them with energy from Ma, from himself, which originates from Ma. So, like, that sounds very similar to Moya, who is a human infused somehow with Majorat energy, which is again derived from Moya.
So the idea then is that that Lucian as a Majorat might have the power to do something similar. Maybe.
Maybe on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Hard to say, but it does seem similar in certain ways.
Yeah. And I mean, that's an interesting way of looking at it, and definitely something that I think can, you know, we can kind of think of and say, oh yeah, that's a, you know, a kind of good way to answer that. Until we get more information on that. But Moya's first presence in game is the Nadir Fremenic saga, and ever since then her role has increased in that. And even in that saga, we saw her power increase there. And I know I wasn't, you know, one of the biggest fans of the Fremenic sagas out there, but I feel like if we're gonna, you know, point to a saga maybe and talk about how her hunt for Bilrock in particular has always been something that she was a part of, you start to see the very early templates of that in Nadir. So. We also know, of course, that Moya was instrumental in Extinction being the sabotaging factor to the point where she tried to kill the player character. And it was from that point in that quest that it became very clear that Moya was going to have a role going forward post Elder Gods. And it was
not going to be on our side.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
it's hard to come back from that.
And it's interesting because Adrasteo was also in that quest. And we're going to dive into each of these points in a little bit here. Mm-hmm. But it was that moment in Extinction that we kind of saw the writing on the wall, you know, the last 15 minutes of the season of the TV show, where you might be able to gather an idea and say, ah, yes, this is maybe where we're going next.
That's the next season
with the storyline. So. Yeah. And Bilrock, of course, central pillar. And, you know, this is kind of where we left the story off, in that at the end of the Battle of 4 and 3 quest, we know that Bilrock is no more and Moya has effectively taken over and is the de facto leader, I guess you could say, of the Zamorakian forces post-Civil War, because Bilrock's side, of course, won that Civil War. And we don't exactly know how all these pieces that are left out on the chessboard, so to speak, are going to be used in the coming storyline. We, of course, had the Necromancy season pause, and we need to pick up where we're at after that. So...
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on the brief overview, anything I might have missed that you guys want to highlight before we move on to some of the deeper digging, let's just say?
What always strikes me as insane is the trace back to Temple of Vykov. Just because she's mentioned in the quest rejection dialogue when you reject the quest from Lucian. So really, really pulling from those very deep lore cuts by time and the year, it's decided like we're going to make the most lore full Fremenic saga. And it's going to be about this throwaway line. I don't know if it started that way or if it was attached to that, but
that line must have inspired someone. I mean, there's no way that was planned in 2002.
No,
I would be very surprised.
No.
So yeah, that must have inspired someone. And they're like, hey, that would be cool.
And how that's grown since.
Fun fact, Temple of Vykov was a Paul Gower quest. So you can definitely see somebody like Paul Gower just, you know, throwing that out there as a quick line that, you know, my daughter is more of a hero than you. And obviously, you know, we don't even know the daughter's name at that point. But... when it comes to the interactions later with Lucian, we know it's Moya.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that early time on Gielinor here, about where Moya's story began. And I feel like when we look at this and we look at the general discussion and the way the character went, we already talked about the half human, half Majorat factor kind of tied to maybe one of Lucian's creations. But I think it was Sliske's endgame, right? Where we learn that she was half human, half Majorat, right?
I think that was in Nadir.
Okay.
I think that was
in Nadir. Yeah. I was like, that's
but lame. It wasn't Sliske's endgame where Zaros commented on it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we get two interesting interactions about that in Endgame. One of them is Zaros, and the other one is Azanadra, who is absolutely horrified.
Who is, I don't, that's the most, like, appalled I've ever seen him. He usually doesn't have such a strong reaction to things. He's usually much more composed and, like, the faithful servant.
He was absolutely, Moya
ticks him the wrong way.
Yeah, just blasphemy, destroy, horror.
And Zaros not knowing even how Lucian did it, which it's Zaros. So who knows what he's actually thinking? Maybe he's thinking, I won't let someone else actually create life or half create life as well.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. The secret of her creation died with Lucian. And
he says that.
But then, you know, like you said, Abernick, is that, you know, Zaros just doing Zaros things, or does Zaros not even know? But
he says he doesn't know is like, if he didn't actually know, would he even admit it?
Exactly. So I almost just want to ignore what Zaros said there, you know?
Yeah.
The way the character is. Or was?
Yeah, that's the name of Zaros.
What happened?
I don't know. Maybe at this point, Zaros was written more earnestly. I think he was definitely made more backstabby with the Elder God Wars arc. So at this point, I really don't know if in Endgame they were thinking, oh yeah, he might have actually been lying, or no, he's still super earnest.
Or is there a way, you know, just with the Majorat link on the Zarosian side, that he would know, right? Because they're all creations of this revision. So there's got to be some kind of tie passed down from Ma to Zaros where, you know, you might have some sort of idea of how something like that would work. But, of course, the more shocking aspect is the fact that Moya is seen as an abomination by Azanadra, which, again, we're assuming Azanadra, the same consistent character, and for the sake of this section of the podcast right now, we'll say, let's assume this Azanadra we saw here in Endgame is the same Azanadra we worked with into and up to, you know, the end of the Elder God Wars arc. We would never have seen Azanadra that, I guess you could say, concerned about that. And with that, it really does, you know, beg the question, what happened here? Was this designed to be something that was, you know, shock value for the Majorat? Or is this, you know, just common RuneScape and fantasy literary devices where it's like, okay, we're taking the player for a ride on this. This is something out there for people who are fans of Moya. We're gonna upset them a bit, and we're gonna hope that they, you know, rise up in relation to that. Because she was, of course, one of the ambassadors in the entire, you know, Six Age arc.
Definitely a figurehead, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I am realizing, looking at this quote that in the document, is that right after this, I believe Moya yells out, I might be the future of our race, which also might come back later. How things played out.
Which you kind of see post-extinction.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely, she seems to be much more preserving Majorat life and stuff like that. So I don't know if that was a thought back, it's, let's say, it's Endgame to make that her thing, or if that was something that was built off of. But
well, the implication I got, and I think Tana sort of hinted at this earlier, but the implication I always got from Nadir was that Moya's creation was an experiment into Majorat reproduction. Because Majorat can't reproduce on Gilinor. They're biologically incapable. They are literally a dying race.
Almost kind of similar to the Ilyuanka?
In the same way that
they need to find a different way to reproduce.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if that was maybe one of the biggest things to come out of that saga in general. But that is something that is consistent within the Majorat race, so it makes sense that it would be passed on there. And with that, you question, how long is Moya's lifespan going to be? Does she? Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, that I don't know has been answered. Does she need to rejuvenate?
Well, that's also an interesting question, because in Nadir, so Nadir has a very large time skip sort of in the first cutscene where we see Moya and she's looking like Moya, and then we jump cut 500 years later and she is not looking so good. And the implication that I always took from this is that, yeah, like other Majorat, she's just been bleeding power for 500 years and she's been skeletonified like mm-hmm. Azanadra, like Wahisatel, like all of them. And then during the at the end of the quest, or sort of towards the end of the quest, she starts rejuvenating herself by sucking down power out of
Yeah,
Bemenheim.
Like Bill Rock was.
Yeah. So maybe?
Is that why she was always on the hunt for Bill Rock?
During the 500 years, she was on Lucian's orders, but yeah. Incidental that she found the way Bill Rock was also avoiding rituals.
Yeah.
And I would need to go back to it, but did we figure out why Bill Rock was doing that at all in Ritual of the Majorat or anything surrounding that?
He was hearing voices and thought that Zamorak was at the bottom of this hole.
Yeah, he was looking for Zamorak. He was trying
which
to
which, of course,
tunnel.
Was Damon, with what they were aiming for initially with Damonheim, and, you know...
And then got upended by the Sixth Age stuff.
Yeah.
And then sort of came back with Dishonor Among Thieves a little bit. Sort of.
And that was the whole... You guys remember back in the day they pulled... I forget what it was, something versus Floor 61, but the something
Lord of Imperium. One. And I don't think I would ever give up Lord of Imperium.
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I agree.
We made the right choice. Good on us, community.
Yeah, and see, that's that fixation on Damonheim there. And this is just what I just find so fascinating, I guess you could say, with the RuneScape lore stuff, is that we have these, you know, generic inflection points that are made by decisions that Jagex makes in terms of the lore. And of course, one of those is cracking open what became the Sixth Age. And it really, you know, it really begs the question, you know, let's just say folks get their ceremonial 2012 RuneScape server pre-EOC back, and with that, the Sixth Age stuff never happens. What is the history then, and what is the path that Damonheim and the Majorat and whatnot take? Would it look similar to what kind of like what Old School is now doing with their Majorat on that? And I realize this is getting a little bit away from Moya on this,
yeah.
But the thing that I think brings us back is that there was always this, I don't know if we call it a fascination, but a need to find Bill Rock. And eventually she does, which of course we, you know, see in the Succession and Civil War story arc, to the point where Bill Rock is offed and she becomes the de facto leader of the forces there in many ways, succeeding Bill Rock. So maybe that was her destiny all along, and it was kind of foreshadowed in that initial saga, maybe a bit, that Bill Rock and her were going to have this kind of linkage and it was going to be very important, kind of in the way of a student teacher, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely student teacher. I don't know if the Sixth Age hadn't happened. I don't know that we would currently be in a place where Moya would be leading the Zamorakians, because I feel like that was a function of Bill Rock got a place of prominence because Zamorak liked him, or I guess Zamorak liked that Bill Rock was like laser obsessed on finding
built this huge complex for him with all the forces that he was using.
Yeah. So Zamorak was like, hey, yeah, you're a good dude. You're loyal. You're going to be my right hand. And I think if Zamorak hadn't re-entered the picture, it's hard to say how that would have shaken out. But like at the same time, like the Zamorakians didn't really have a unified leader.
No.
Before Zamorak came back. So it's possible that they could have just been their own little faction.
Yeah. I mean, I think remembering back to when Nadir came out, I feel like the reason that they made this whole, like, of the five Firmnik sagas, this is the one that's most story-driven.
It's also, I think, the only one that came out after EOC, so is, you know, has actually aged a little bit better than the other ones, I think, right?
It came with a second Thok one.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was like three and then two. I think the interpretation around it when it first came out was like, this is an explanation for the strange power event that happened when Dungeoneering just came out.
Right.
It's like either Bill Rock or Moya died, and all four of the possible endings you could have chosen led to some Majorat. And then, of course, as soon as the Sixth Age happens, now you have both Moya, and then especially when Dishonored Among Thieves happens, Billrock back. They're like, yeah, it was kind of the Moya made it to Zamorak option, but also Billrock went to Frenisque and found this other Maw thing and killed, and that was the strange power. So it very retconned its way around, like, oh no, this they both get to live.
Yeah, and
but
see,
this was
that's
supposed
the,
to be an explanation for that.
Right, and see, that's the flowing and ebbing nature of the RuneScape storyline based on, you know, what needs to change for the sake of, you know, the direction the game takes on that. And we should hone in a bit on what we saw in Nadir, specifically the espionage, the disguise aspects, and the memory stealing, because I feel like the memory stuff definitely came back as well in terms of looking at Moya in the Civil War arc.
She's definitely much more like cunning and sly, and personally, my interpretation of that is that she's only half Majorat, so she has to make up for that deficiency among her peers in other ways. She can't just raw power magic at people and win.
Use the human side, use the deviousness.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, well, yeah, but she's also the most treacherous being. I mean, human and Majorat, right? Like
outside of the tier two gods, Zeros and Saren, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
But yeah, just the fact that she needs to don disguises because she can't shapeshift. Like in Nadir, she's stealing Harthen's merchant gear or Tolma's armor or Yadura's necromancy gear. Like she's making up for that in her own way.
And it's interesting you mentioned necromancy gear and all of this because it feels like, and you can see this even going back to, you know, quests prior to the saga here, where the game is always flirting with the idea of what people like Billrock are up to, what the Majorat are up to. Could there be something, you know, related to necromancy? But we didn't get necromancy until 2023 in terms of a skill. And when you tee all that back up, to me, what I'm seeing here looking at this, and granted, we're still early on here, in the early parts of this episode and what Moya's entire existence is about, I honestly feel like there was, and this is when the Gowers were still in charge, that there was going to be the central beat of the RuneScape storyline was going to be that Majorat stuff. And that was going to be the, you know, the conclusion of the game's first big story when you start bringing all these paths together, at least, you know, in the ones outside of the races, if that makes sense, because you're always going to have your gnomes and your elves.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Majorat are sort of what sets RuneScape's lore apart from other fantasy properties.
Yeah.
It's one of the sort of the more unique, and it's not totally unique. Like the Majorat are essentially just a lich, which like liches are a thing. But it is very sort of uniquely RuneScape. And they did form the backbone of the first major storyline.
Do you guys think, sorry, go ahead, Avernick.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I think that it's pretty well established at this point that there were plans or ideas, at least, to put like a Zamorak boss fight at the bottom of Demonheim before the Sixth Age, and like that's like the culmination of Majorat stuff, right? He's the Majorat god.
Yeah, he's the king of the
Majorat. And you were supposed to fight a god, you know, prior to the Sixth Age stuff.
Is whatever what a god meant at that point, pre-Sixth Age, before that was defined. But it feels like that could have been like a really big like climax of all the Majorat tomfoolery going on. And Nadir was post-ritual of the Majorat, right? Because it had a scene that happened at the Ritual Stone. So maybe that was like the first inkling of this is where we're going to start headed, is we're going to bring the Dragonkin, the castle, and the Dragonkin, and the Majorat down to that, maybe.
Yeah, and I don't know if we mentioned the portal magic yet, but that was you know, specifically mentioned as well, Billrock's portal magic in the saga, and you know, when you start summing all these things up, I think you're definitely on that right path there with that. Avernick, what did you mean by That there were four ending options, and the canon one is her accompanying Bilrog to the final floor.
Like a lot of things that released in this time, they thought that they could put a bunch of the player chooses the ending options. There were two, I believe, that ended in Moya offs Bilrog, or at least knocks him out to the point it's implied that he's the strange power, and two where it was the other way around. I think one of them is like Moya threatening she's going to tell the other Majrak he's around, or one of them's like Moya's going to go with Bilrog actually to 461, or one's you say that but you intend to kill him. But it was pretty well defined when she came, when both of them were back by the time of Dishonor Among Thieves, that it was the option where they go peacefully in agreement down to floor 61, and then they both go through this chaos portal thing, and she ends up with Zamorak, and he ends up, I guess, on Frenisque to find that thing that he killed for the strange power. They had to consolidate the options. They couldn't make them all valid. It couldn't be both that she killed Bilrog and he killed Moya, and also they went peacefully down.
Okay. Well, I don't know if they've changed since release, because I wasn't really playing at the time. But looking at the wiki, the four options are Bilrog. Moya says that she's going to tell on Dad, and Bilrog knocks her in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Ending two is Moya decides to claim Demonheim for herself and tries to steal Bilrock's identity, and then Bilrog punches her out and drags her down.
Mm-hmm.
Option three is basically Moya says, "Yeah, I'm gonna go with you," but she's got her fingers crossed behind her back. And then option four is that, but without the finger cross. So I think you can make an argument, unless they've changed these since release, which is possible. I think you can make those work with how the storyline turned out. And I actually think the ones where there's more tension in their relationships sort of pay off Legacy of Zamorak a little bit better.
I guess I hadn't thought about it in that respect.
That's interesting. That's actually really interesting that you tie that back to Legacy of Zamorak. Because
one of the things that I found, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but one of the things that I found about Legacy of Zamorak is she's very, like, between Extinction and Legacy of Zamorak. Like, in Extinction, Moya is very much like Zamorak's good little soldier.
Yep.
And then in Legacy of Zamorak, she's still Zamorak's good soldier, but she's got a whole lot less patience for Bilrog.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed very sort of out of left field for me.
And
particularly
and see,
sort of looking at the history as it's all compiled and laid out.
Yeah, and see, that's specifically why I wanted to ask at this point, in summarizing all this, is that can we see and say, you know, with definitively, character-wise, that the Moya that we see in Nadir is the same Moya that we have now? Because this is what I was seeing, exactly the path we took on this in building this, is that I think that what we had here in the saga and the initial introduction of Moya definitely felt like they were obviously going a different path. And then we have this huge left turn when it comes to the Sixth Age stuff. So I had a bit of difficulty seeing how the character we had in the saga and what we saw leading up to that leads to where we got now. And like you said, Zardones, the events post-extinction, does this mean that, you know, Moya would have turned out differently than she was portrayed here in the saga?
Mm-hmm. No, that's actually an interesting thought with, she's changing all the time to kind of meet story need. And especially like Legacy Zamorak, it is interesting to think maybe it was more malicious version. I did just find the Dishonor Among Thieves quote where Bilrog, when you ask about the strange power, says Moya and I joined hands and walked into the rift together. But also, he might not have known that she intended to kill him. So,
and he also might have been lying.
That also, too. I mean, they are Zamorakians. They are de facto antagonists. I think it's the up for interpretation ending, I think, was probably the wrong choice. But I think us as benevolent readers can interpret it in ways that I think that actually the malicious endings, yeah, are more interesting now.
Yeah, but exactly.
I had settled at Dishonored Among Thieves that it was the nice ending, but
well, yeah, and I mean, to be fair, we would have settled, and we would have liked, and we did like what we saw in things like Dishonored Among Thieves,
empathetic,
and what was going on there,
yeah.
Because we were in the process as players of being ratcheted up towards what we didn't know at the time was Sliske's game, which of course culminated in Endgame and then led on to the Elder Gods, which, you know, we learned was the entire grand plot of the thing between Jazz and Sliske. But the point is that you have a character here that was used in a series of different quests in entirely different ways, and, you know, we can understand and we see how the needs of the game to, you know, bend and meld into different directions is a thing. But that's exactly what I meant by, is this the same character? Because I think, like you said, the treacherous endings are more different. And I'd like to see where World in RuneScape winds up with something like this for the Majorat storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be really interesting to see. So.
This doesn't really address what you were just saying, but I think, like, the way to redeem the cooperative ending is that Moya's core character, or you could argue that Moya's core character trait is finding out where she fits in the world, which is a natural story for her character, because her character is fundamentally unnatural. Like, her existence is an affront to the laws of
to what Majorat are.
To what Majorat are, to what humans are. Like, she is one of a kind. She should not exist, but she does. So there's a natural story there, which is, well, where do I belong? And she starts that journey as the daughter of Lucien, and that's who she is. She is Lucien's soldier.
And she hates it.
And she hates it because Lucien's a colossal dick. So option two is, okay, maybe Bilrock will help me find who I am, where I belong. And then somewhere off screen that we don't see, that goes sideways, and she decides, right, screw it. Turns out Zamorak had the right idea, but Zamorak's not going to tell me who to be. I'm going to follow his message, and I'm going to decide who I be.
And that's where we
and
get
it turns
to...
out I am Queen the wilderness.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm gonna have to bleep that. I apologize if so.
The
bleep will be better.
She doesn't say I am amazing like Zamorigel did.
Right. But if she did, she would be not lying.
Okay, that's fair.
Or not delusional.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. And it's at that point you get to, you know, the Six Age stuff and the battle of Lumbridge, in particular on that. But Patreon, before we do that, I want to thank our Patreon supporters before we go down another shift in Moya's character. So this week I'd like to thank Alvaro L., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Chilbura, Daniel W., Dominic R., Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lemon Lodge, Ling01, Luminos, Nate the Great, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Runestar, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Sky, Targien, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V., Ukulele Steve, Zant, and Zazakon. Of course, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. We just put out our March monthly bit. We had some illness on the team, so that was why we're a week late on this. But the topic of this month was an introduction to PVM with Parnassius as the guinea pig. The goal with this monthly bit is to lay out a blueprint for anybody who wants to take the first steps from Slayer up to doing PVM, getting comfortable with God Wars 1, God Wars 2, to the point of eventually being able to kill all the Elder God Wars bosses on normal and some of the other ones around that level as well. We go over gear, perks, equipment, action bars, the whole shebang in about an hour and 15 minutes. So that sounds interesting to you, sign up at patreon.com/RSBNB. But everybody else, who has access to that episode already, gets access to an entire back catalog of 60-odd other monthly bits, the ability to vote on monthly bit topics, and, of course, the pleasure of helping to host, fund the cost for hosting and production of RSPNB Update. These ads are not scripted. That's why sometimes they sound different. That's why sometimes I say you're hosting the show. I don't necessarily know if you are, but it might be happening that way.
Put that on the Patreon tier rewards.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if somebody wants to, you know, do that at some point, we would happily do that. Just have to be the right person, the right arrangement. But oh boy, that's a topic for another day. Don't put that on the show notes. We also have the VIP tier, $3 a month. You receive a special VIP rank on Discord, including chat channel access, mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And we, of course, have our insider tier, where you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week, and you'll also gain access to the clips we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, another big, huge thank you to our experienced tier Patreon members. Thanks so much, everybody. Check us out, patreon.com/RSBNB.
Thanks.
All right. Sysadmin things aside, Battle of Lumbridge. Another huge inflection point in RuneScape stories, and another huge changing time for Moya. And I feel like we had, you know, a very clear character that was mentioned based on what we knew and what we put together from the saga. But maybe you're right, Sir Jones. Maybe Moya's entire existence is to be that blank slate that can ebb and flow as the game devs need, but also as she figures out herself. Because I think we've all seen movies where there's a character who doesn't necessarily know their place, and eventually by the end of it, winds up in one place or another, for better or worse.
Sure, I mean, there's whole classes of fiction based on that premise.
Yeah. Are they very popular, like, in general? Like, I personally, you know, don't like the characters to change that much, but maybe that's just me.
It's funny that we're talking about this, because I know this is something that Maud Shrike finds very annoying, is that there's a whole bunch of writers or wannabe writers who were raised on Star Wars who think that the hero's journey is the only way to tell stories. So are they popular?
Why did she say that?
Oh, I don't remember. It might have been on her old Twitter.
Yeah,
which she deleted and she left.
And see, that's actually a very, very interesting point, because what other character in game, aside from us, uses their arc to tell the story?
Zanuck.
Like, okay.
Start listing them all.
It's always Zanuck.
Staffland.
Yeah, Safalan. I was reaching for the name, but yeah, Safalan is kind of similar in that respect.
I wouldn't what about say the it's kid? That often.
What about who? Sorry, Shane?
The kid with the lamps.
Philip?
Yeah.
Philippe. Yeah, Philippe does. Yeah.
In his one quest.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not
Zeldaban?
It's not like, okay, maybe.
And yeah, somewhat.
But
point has been made then.
Anyway.
The point is made with this is that Moya is the biggest of them then, out of everybody that we've mentioned so far on this.
She is possibly like one of the longest running characters that has a consistent screen time, which is, I think, happened in the background for most people.
Yeah, she doesn't get a lot of high profile
at least not
appearances.
Not
till
Extinction.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
I mean, you don't get any higher than being Zymerac's emissary in the start of the Sixth Age live event in 2013.
Yes, which I think begs the question, why Moya? Because there were many options, so why was Moya chosen as the general?
You choose somebody who can relate to humans. Is that your theory?
My theory was that the first sentence you said about her during this Lore Diggers episode, Moya is a half-human, half-Majrat daughter of Lucian, is an amazing selling point. She has one of the best one sentence. This person's cool.
Yeah, she has a good hook.
And that makes total sense now that you mention it, because what they had wanted to happen with Battle of Lumbridge is they wanted Zamorak to win. But when
they thought he was going to be so cool.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they thought he would win.
Well, no, it was specifically, I know somebody out there specifically said that they were thinking Zamorak would win. I don't remember who it was, but they were thinking Zamorak would win.
Yeah.
But he didn't, because people back then perceived it as good versus bad.
Yeah.
And went with Sarah Doman instead, when it wasn't until Dishonor Among Thieves and a bit after that that we really learned the nuance of what Zamorak is all about. And then you see exactly what you said, Avernick. How neat does that sound? Half human, half Majorat, being your representative to Zamorak in the Battle of Lumbridge. Because everybody knows, of course, that the Majorat was very popular. You know, you look at things like Desert Treasure and all of the Zaros stuff leading up to there, as well as, of course, Ritual of the Majorat quest. With that, while Gothic Sleeps, everything tied to that, you would think that that's why you choose then.
Even this, more so, you're trying to appeal to players that probably don't read everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she looks cool, and she has a lot of cool associations.
Who is Sarah Doman's general again?
Or emissary? A new character.
Oh, yeah.
It was the ice scene that's persisted a little bit in the Falador Castle since.
Yeah, he is doing combat drills in Falador Castle Courtyard.
I think they didn't even think they needed to have someone cool for Sarah Doman. He's like, Sarah Doman sells himself. Or they didn't even want to sell Sarah Doman. But
yeah, I mean, I think the argument would be, this argument doesn't really work because, like, yeah, Shane is right. Jagex expected Zamorak to win because they assumed the players were all edgelords. But, like, on a narrative standpoint, generally people take the good options. And by the time of Battle of Lumbridge, we'd had a decade of lore establishing Sarah Doman as good and Zamorak as the literal embodiment of evil.
Yeah, that's pretty RuneScape.
You do, like, in order to make those two sides equally compelling, given those two facts, you do need to sort of make Sarah Doman way more boring and Zamorak way more interesting.
Yeah, and you do that with Moya.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be a theme going forward. She's used a lot as the figurehead for Zamorakians, even though,
yes,
as far back as Dishonor Among Thieves, it's very clearly established she's not even the right-hand guy.
Here's the issue. I don't think the vast majority of players out there, judging by the reaction to Extinction and the subsequent Civil War arc, like the character.
I don't think she had much of the Extinction and Civil War arc going on in this time, at least.
No.
But it would be this time, like, leading up to her being
the Extinction person. The reason I say that is because I feel like the character wasn't liked, and I feel like you can bring that back even further in that the fact there were these ambassadors with story behind them, and I mean, if you knew the lore, you knew the saga, and you did a Lore Diggers back in 2013, you would have known that there was something to Moya, and that might have been very interesting to you. But the point is that she was overshadowed and has consistently been overshadowed by in the recent era, player sentiment and the way the players feel about it, the Elder Gods, and in the Battle of Lumbridge, of course. Oh my god, it's Sarah Doman and Zamorak for the first time in Lumbridge firing big beams at each other.
Well, that's kind of, like, you basically just summed up the whole problem with the Sixth Age.
So everyone got overshadowed.
Everyone got overshadowed because the gods are here and the gods are a big problem we have to deal with.
Yeah.
And that is specifically why the thing that was going to bother me the most about Old School is that I didn't want anything to do with the future of their Majorat storyline if there was ever a chance they were going to bring the gods back, because I don't think that should have happened in the Old School line. They're not going to do that. But no, it's that overshadowing and just taking it up to 11 when they didn't need to. And that's why, you know, we're just seeing these connections here right now with Moya as the ambassador.
Big marketing push.
I feel like we could do a whole episode just on talking. The sixth age. Do a whole Lore Diggers just on the Sixth Age.
Just on the Battle of Lumberjack.
yeah, no, we're not doing one episode on the Sixth Age. No.
No, I think also just to throw it out there, another reason that Moya might keep popping up is for a lot of the reasons Erdones was mentioning during the Nadir saga, is that I think she's probably a field day for writers. Like, she has so many complex relationships right off the bat. I think she might just be fun to write for.
Well, I know, I can't remember who it was that said this, but I know one of the J-Mods was very happy both with her and with Trindine because they're both just snark factories.
that's a different kind of writing, but yes, I can see that also being
fun. It's a different kind of fun, but it does help.
Absolutely. In the same way that maybe one recent character that might have gotten destroyed called the Raptor might not have been as fun to write for.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I think that does factor into, like, what do people want to work on, which, I mean, they're controlling the stuff. So, like, if what they want to work on is what we get.
Yeah. And, you know, this is all fine and dandy, the overshadowing bit. But I think the biggest thing comes to, you know, how that battle ended is that it was Moya herself who saves Amarak at the end of it.
Yep. She got that spot in the very choppy cutscene. I don't know how it plays in your guys' computers, but that thing has never
been it was very fine. Well. It was fine on my end.
I think they've fixed them. I remember trying to watch them in like 2020 and they were awful.
Are you sure it's not broken again?
No. No, I am not. Yeah.
She does get that position to save Zamorak, which probably going forward into Silent Thieves, they probably thought, oh, he saved her. She saved him. She probably gets a higher status now.
Yeah.
For being at the battle, for being
right. And then you can also abstract that all forward to where we're at now, with in effect, like we said, de facto leading the Zamorak in forces.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have
all the way back in 2013.
Then you have another case as well in the Tuska event where she's the ambassador again. But, you know, I just kind of read into that at the time that they would go with her because she was already the ambassador for everything else, already Sixth Age. Yeah. So it kind of just made sense to keep it the same on that, I guess.
Did they redo this? I'm sorry. I'm going to look at this real fast.
Well, I know what happened is that when the Tuska World event happened, I think all the representatives from the faction went to, you know, the Tuska's back thing or wherever it was, the lobby where before we would go to the live event there. So
I was looking to see who did the other leaders also carry over.
I think so.
It was also Padomenes.
Yeah. But I feel like that entire Six Age
it was
period, like you
they
said,
changed out Padomenes.
Oh, interesting.
The Bree, the centaur from Godmer's Dungeon.
Okay.
Interesting. Anyway.
I feel like when it comes to the Six Age stuff, you could really, like you said, Zerdones, do an entire episode or series of episodes on that, in effect summarizing it and looking back on it. When we get to the other stuff that we were looking at in the Six Age and we go specifically to Dishonor Among Thieves, that makes sense. We want to specifically talk about her bit at the Empyrean Citadel. I think you put this in this one in the notes, Abernick. This one was you or was this Zerdones? Because there's a break there in the line.
Probably me. I was trying to break up the world events versus the Dishonored.
Okay, fair.
The quest versus the event appearances.
Yeah. And what about that advances the character, reaffirms the character in your view?
I mean, just the fact that during the heist, she's the one calling shots. She's like the point person, and Bilrock doesn't even go. I don't know what they're like. I feel like if Bilrock was supposed to be the right hand guy and he was supposed to be important and they wanted to use him, he would go on the heist where he would do something. I really don't know why they gave the hand wave excuse that he'd be better tracking Sliske from the base. unless they want Moya to be the top dog.
Well, I think another reason is Moya gives a different kind of gameplay.
That's yeah.
Because Dishonor Among Thieves is where we get Moya's memory drain power come back, and that gives her a unique kind of gameplay style. Whereas if we had Bilrock, he's just another Majorat. We already have Zemo.
Just another Majorat might be one of the best reasons why Moya keeps getting spotlight, is because amongst the others,
have too many Majorats.
Yes.
She's smashed
problems.
Going back to what we said, like you said at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
We need less of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
See, I feel like if you played through the Sixth Age and you look specifically at how Moya was carried through all the different quests, and you were just specifically focusing on Moya and the lines that wound up coming up with that, I think you get to a point where you could say that, yeah, you know, even, you know, before Dishonor Among Thieves, I could, you know, support the Zamorak inside, so to speak. But I don't necessarily know even, you know, when Dishonor Among Thieves is happening, if people wanted to go that way.
I think at that point, everyone was like, where's my God's Quest? And only a couple of them got them. I think at this point people were actually pretty set. Like, emissaries had come out, people had picked their faction, and they weren't going to be swayed, I don't think.
Well, the largest one was definitely Zerosian, I have to say, probably.
Fate of the Gods came out, and that battle was lost for everyone else.
From what I've gathered, from what J-Mods have said, I don't know if there's numbers on this that are known, but I think Ceridoman and Zamorak were vying for top two, and then everyone else was just left in the dust. And then
Zamorak or Zaros?
Or sorry, Zaros.
Yeah, okay,
Ceridoman and Zaros. Everybody else left in the dust, and then the poor godless were drowning in the bottom of the pool.
Right, the original intent of like, oh, the player is going to be against the gods, like Guthix wanted, and then no, everyone wanted to be on the gods.
Yeah, no one wanted to be godless.
And the whole part of, you know, invention, so to speak. But I guess to just bring all this back, we'll go to some of the dialogue, I guess, that was mentioned at various parts about this, again mentioning Bilrock and the specific, you know, tie back to Moya talking about her Majorat and human heritage, and she said, for that I thank him, but I thank him more for introducing me to Zamorak. So that's what it was all about in the end.
Yeah,
she always was very grateful for the Zamorak thing. That was also that was dialogue from Battle of Lumbrae, so she was definitely trying to sell Zamorak. But it did seem, at least from that dialogue, that she was full on. I don't know if in Nadir she even expressed very much like devoutness or fealty or whatnot. But after meeting the god that her father followed and Bilrock followed, she's like, oh, I get this.
Well, I think before Nadir, she was like, she was Lucian's errand girl, and I don't know that Lucian was all that much of a Zamorakian, really.
He wanted to do what Zamorak did, but he wasn't worshipping.
Yeah, he was in it for himself.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He always felt like a rogue factor on that, in terms of what we knew of him. And, you know, Moya sums it up best. I owe it all to Zamorak. He is the father I never had.
That probably is very impactful for a lot of things that go forward.
You know, I feel like our next section here kind of takes a bit of a turn on that. So we should probably summarize, you know, the Battle of Lumbrae and Dishonor Among Thieves section here on this. But obviously, same character. Does it still feel like she's the same character we met in the sagas and the lineage before that? Like, the big change hasn't happened yet, has it?
I think that she's slightly different in that she cares about Zamorak now, to serve a purpose, because the Sixth Age is very much being in a god's faction. But to the extent that I don't think she's, like, complex yet. Like, she's single-focused, one-minded.
Yeah, okay. her narrative role is to be the Zamorakian.
Mm-hmm.
The Zamorakian, what you interact with.
What about when it comes to Till Death Do Us Part and the forbidden thing known
She's
as
She's technically in this.
Technically in yeah. this, yeah. Halloween event. To unleash a bit of stuff on Zoutac, which I feel like is the next thing that people are always still talking about, you know, is Zoutac done? Yes. Personally, I think Zoutac has been confirmed as being done at the end of Elite Dungeon 3. That's my personal take on it. But I know there's lots of people who would like to wedge that door open and explore that more.
Yeah, I mean, not to go too far off the rails, but I think Zoutac is a random conflict generator. Where you can basically just have Zoutac be at the root of any kind of conflict. he's instant plot, just add water.
Zoutac and Erebus is kind of something to, I don't know, solve the Elder God problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, we still got we still got the idea of that mysterious, you know, six Elder God and where all those, you know, people went and
mystery
whatnot.
Keeps people engaged.
Yes,
and yeah,
and as long as it stays mystery, they'll stay around.
And
yeah,
you know,
I really hope they never actually resolve it because I don't think the engine could take it.
Oh no, they couldn't make that.
Right,
but,
and you said a very key point.
Closed.
I have always found the RuneScape storylines most interesting when they are baked up in mystery and not necessarily having a god or some other factor, you know, just sitting in front of us telling
just
us
explain
what,
their history.
What is going on, right?
Yeah.
Like, to put it in the sense of archaeology, the things that got me the most interested in that mystery-wise were the writing on the walls and the stuff at the bottom of the Sintistan dig site. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's J.J. Abrams' thing, the mystery box. Questions are more important.
And it
than
always
answers.
Falls apart when it needs demands an answer.
Yeah,
like you can't end that story is
you
the
just
problem.
End it and you're everyone's happy.
Yeah.
Lost.
And, oh, God. Okay.
Star Wars.
But yeah, time back to Moya. Till Death Do Us Part did happen during Zoutac Mania, just before
Zoutac Mania.
A couple months before ED3 came out, but also Moya wasn't on the key art for this, right? It was the Four Horsemen, and then the narrative payoff that came in ED3 with the lore page. It wasn't even the full book; it was the page. Was the Calgarians were trying to do some Zoutac ritual, and they used Moya for a reason. I don't know if it was ever explained why she was the right choice, but she was clearly a good choice to use for something that was combining Demonheim with the payoff moment of Nightmare Lucen. Like, I think that she's a means to getting the really cool boss fight at the end.
That would be really fun to, you know, kind of pull on for more threads, I think. And in many ways is very tangential to what we had just talked about in the Sixth Age and Battle of Lumbridge things. But at the same time, it's exactly what we said at the beginning. This is the character who is, you know, in effect, the wet Play-Doh that can be molded as Jagex needs. And we're going to get somebody in the end who, like you said, Zerdones, has a bit of conflict and a bit of, you know, reasoning behind them. So, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that because I do not have all the lore pages out of ED3. So I wasn't aware of that and I haven't actually gone out to read them yet.
It was there's a mini boss in ED3. It was an extra Calgarian general. And there's the lore page about how they tried to summon Zoutac during the Halloween event. And then they didn't succeed because of us and the horsemen. And so then they got recruited onto and the ambassador's squad.
Yeah. And I remember that Halloween event. Everybody was, you know, just focused on the horsemen stuff at the end. But I guess if you dug down to it, you knew that this was kind of where it was coming from on that. So, like you said, it's the mystery box that you can shake that makes things interesting. But if it ceases being mystery, it's never gonna be the proper payoff, and you don't know what the
even if you nail the payoff, then you get the immediate question: what's next?
Yeah,
what's bigger?
Right.
Even if you managed it,
and see, that's the thing: has Jagex ever managed to pull off a story like that?
Mileage varies with Elder God Wars.
Which is where we go next. Which is where we go next.
Segue.
Interestingly enough. You're getting very good at that, Abernick.
I can read what the next line is.
Yeah. So Elder God Wars, and of course, this is where we get to things like Desperate Times, Desperate Measures, and being the front force for the Zamorakians in Saren's Council, where you crammed everybody into that room.
Always needs a Zamorakian representative. It's always there. Moya.
Yeah. And with this, how did we feel about... I mean, we didn't really have much aside from some side dialogue from her in the initial start of this quest until... the series until she appeared in Extinction, did we? I don't think.
Until I was looking into her for this episode, I forgot she was on the council.
Well, it's so easy to, because who isn't on that council?
I mean, she's not Juna or Ichi, so she's not 50% of the room.
Or Zerador.
I forgot he was. Yeah, Zerador. Yeah. The big ones.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. If you look back to the dialogue that was there, you see, and the wiki's really good at this, by the way, if anybody's ever interested in pulling this up, if you want to see anywhere that Moya speaks, they do have a list of all of her transcripts where she was active in there. And, you know, when it comes to the Elder God War stuff, it was really just looking at this here, it was really just Desperate Times.
Can I or can I not use your land as a place to plant seeds? Yeah, that's that section.
No, because that's basically it.
No, because until Karapak shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She was just a tool to.
There's a plot device.
A plot device, yes.
That's right. And with that. What does this...
Until
like,
she's not.
Right, and that's what I was getting to, is that General in Battle of Lumbridge, General for the Elder God Wars things, and, you know, we have the dialogue in Desperate Times, but again, I don't think anybody, when we were, you know, teeing things up here, thought that she would become... what she has become now and become the, you know, the central linchpin to the story here. Like looking at the Desperate Times transcript, she has 13 lines in that quest, and which is obviously huge quest dialogue wise.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned specifically, you know, you have the introduction of where she says who she is and who she's working for. And then it's a bit about planting the garden on that, and you know, maybe you might have an army of the undead or something to that effect. She mentions the Empyrean Citadel again, which might be an interesting place, but beyond that, there's really nothing in that quest and anything else in the Elder God Wars arc until Extinction that points to Moya being a role. And I'm wondering with this, was that kind of a way? Because I never know how this works, and it'd be interesting to get some backstory if the arc from Desperate Times to Extinction was mapped out at that point.
Yeah.
I think that there is way enough time between Desperate Times and Extinction that it was probably not. And I think it would have been at the end of Elder God Wars when they were starting to map out Legacy of Zamorak and Age of Chaos and Fort Furin 3, where they're like, we should probably put her in something now before people call it an Aspel. Which would then be Shrike seeing, oh, they made the model already for Legacy of Zamorak. Let's put her in this.
Yeah, I would probably put the decision a little bit earlier in time, but yeah, broad strokes, I think I would agree. I don't think by Desperate Times they knew they were going to use Moya in a significant way.
2019 to 2022 is 3 years.
Yeah.
A lot happened in those 3 years. We'll
a lot did, including them figuring out that they were getting the gods off world. What are we doing next, etc.
Yeah, and then we get to Extinction on that, which I feel like is the one that everybody's probably wanting us to talk about here, because this, in many views, was kind of the like we mentioned, another case of, you know, the last 15 minutes of the season, this is where we're going for the next season sort of thing. Yeah. when we're you know, on Aya and whatnot, we've been took the eggs there and we're running to try and escape, and oh my god, she tries to kill us and prevent us from getting back.
How did you guys feel about that? Because I know some people were not happy
that she was friendly.
Yeah.
I was not happy.
You know, I...
But were you not happy that you expected it? Or that you're like, why would she do that? I've been nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
My sense of that is that at that point in time, I was too focused on the bigger goal. And not the dying. Thing...
Yeah.
And the thing about that was like, okay, we've been dealing with this quest that has, and I think it's actually been said by Maud Shrike herself, we said it on the show, it is Daddy Issues the quest, right?
Yep.
Presented in a various number of ways. So it really didn't, you know, make sense why she was there. But I think one of the things, and I think we did talk about this on the special we did with Jack and Shrike when Extinction came out, was that the idea behind presenting Adrastea, presenting Moya in that quest, was there to kind of pave the way for where they were going next. And that was deliberately there and just kind of an extra in terms of everything, you know, that was presented there on that.
Yeah, it's set up for Legacy of Zamorak. I do think she makes sense in the quest, both in the sense of I think her inclusion makes narrative sense because of Daddy Issues the quest and because she's an interesting foil to Adrastea. But also, like, to answer Avernick's question, I thought she was totally in character. I had no issues with her trying to... I don't want to put it that way because, you know, obviously I'm not stoked, but I thought it was in character for her to want to kill me at that point.
Right.
And because our goals were diametrically opposed.
And it's very Zamorakian to do that. It's about what can you do to shake the box to make your faction wind up better next.
Like, yes, she's been friend up until now, but that's because whenever we've interacted with her, we've been on the same side.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're not on the same side anymore.
Yeah, and we also need to say here, one huge thing we learned about the Zamorakians in the Sixth Age was that Zamorak's entire shtick was shaking the box to find an entirely different outcome for what's happening next. And Moya does this exact same thing in Extinction. So with that in hindsight 2020, of course, the full disclosure on that, 100% in character.
I think Moya is like the only one that does that. The other Zamorakians...
Well, Zamorak himself did that.
Zamorak himself
I think
does
that's
that.
The thing. That's the point.
But the other followers, debatable. Yeah. I think they're pretty one note. They're pretty...
Well, she considers Zamorak her father, so it makes 100% sense.
But she's much better at that younger mindset of actually doing chaos.
Yeah, she's an actual worthy successor to Zamorak's philosophy. Everyone else is either just evil for the sake of evil, or...
They were on board with evil Zamorak. Like, well, who the hell is this other guy that showed up in Battle Lumberjack? I'm not going to that.
Or they're like Bill Rock and they just want to be in charge and they just want to have hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be Serodominists, but wear red.
So what you're basically saying is that they, in effect, just want to be in charge, whereas folks like Zamorak, Moya, have a grand vision of how they want things to be and are willing to employ those Zamorakian tactics of shaking the box to make it happen.
Yeah.
That's why she did what she did in Extinction.
Either they just want power or they just want to be dicks. But yeah. Yes, I agree with that statement.
And then this is interesting because this was in big, bold letters put in the notes by you, Avernick. And when I opened the doc today, it was exactly the first thing I came here to say as well that I wanted to put in here is that Extinction marked a big turning point for how Moya is used and presented in the game.
Yeah. I think she's a person now. I think that they have an idea of what they're doing with her, and she's
that,
been wishy-washy.
That and that action and that move in Extinction is totally within character, given how closely she followed and, you know, we could even say was mentored by Zamorak, probably.
Yeah. Yes. Well, definitely. I mean, confirmed in the Battle of Freelumbridge.
Yeah.
So but now actualized.
Yeah. Now she's graduated top of her class. And now she's ready to start her career preaching the good word of chaos.
Yeah, and see that's a thing. I think if you, like we said, if you just took the storyline that and you know branched it off after the Nadir saga and didn't do the gods coming back and went for a different ending, you know, for the Majorat stuff, I think you probably would have ended up with a different Moya character. Where she yes. probably wasn't as in as high of a leadership position and was probably, you know, in many ways just another cookie cutter Majorat, let's just say, right? Except functional. Maybe shunned because of the half human mm-hmm. thing.
A different appearance.
Yeah, that spice too. It up. that too. And which by the way, Wiki, RuneScape Wiki has all her different appearances there if you want to go look at them.
Yeah. Largely now using the new model. Thank you, Stu, for going back and replacing her in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know they replaced a bunch of her old models. I don't know if they replaced all of them. I think they have.
The Battle of Lumbridge one that continued through the Sixth Age, except for the Battle of Lumbridge and Tuska comes because the world event stuff has been changed. Like, largely that pink dress one is out. It's only in the wiki still because Legacy, it wasn't an event.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they can't change the cutscene because the cutscenes are pre-rendered.
Yes. So that brings us to a point then with this where we see that foil with Adrastea. We see Moya now being used as a character and presented as a way that is more developed and is that leadership role of the Zamorakians. I guess kind of a little bit after Extinction, but it's not really solidified until after the Civil War arc.
After Succession, yes.
And I think if you're to look at it from that perspective, yes, of course, we had the full, you know, Karapak and Saren conclusions in Extinction, but also I'd say, you know, one of the B or C plots of Extinction was probably, you know, bringing Moya's character to full growth and allowing mm-hmm. her to step into this role for what was going to be, you know, the next arc here. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. It did a lot. Extinction did a lot.
Right.
Also Karapak. And yeah.
And see, that's the thing. I feel like that was a quest that really polarized people in one way or another. And because of that, mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the things that we're kind of, you know, unearthing now with this really weren't appreciated on Quest Launch Week, because I know we didn't spend this much time. I don't think we spent any time really talking about, you know, what the potential ramifications were for Moya aside from the betrayal in Extinction and, you know, using that as a method to get out, right?
Yeah, the focus at the time was very much on resolving the immediate storyline and
Saren's big actions.
Yeah, and that was that was a really hard brief. I don't think that was ever going to be entirely satisfying. But yeah, like that focus means that we miss a lot of the other things that are going on in the quest.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I was the only person I knew of or people I was aware of who played the quest who actually came out of that quest liking Saren more.
As in, you respect her?
What do you mean by liking Saren more?
Or as a character?
Like,
understanding her motives, agreeing kind of with the way that she, you know, did things. Hmm. And
so agreeing with her, like liking her as a person or liking her as a character? Because there's a difference between those two things.
He agrees with philosophy.
With her choice of blood over water. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Philosophy is a good way of putting it. Tanis, you were there on that episode. You know how that discussion went. Yeah.
But I just wanted to say one thing about the Moya of Extinction. I don't think at the time... I know at the time I didn't know that was going to be like... my favorite version of her. And I don't know if that's like because that's where she was in her character development or if that's just who was writing for her at the time. But it does stand out to me as the best version of Moya.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the waters maybe got kind of muddied a little bit post-extinction in that, in terms of, you know, the whole Daughter of Chaos and Civil War side of things, in addition to, you know, what else we were working on at the time with that, because, again, that was an interesting time for the game in the way the quests were delivered, because you recall that we had effectively one mini-quest to start the thing, and then three Civil War mini-quests after that, and then Succession to kind of end it, and people were like, okay, that's a storyline, that's an arc, but yeah, it was. And we got to a point, and this is where we wanted to mention this here, that everything after Moya trying to kill us in Extinction was different than before. It was, you know, in many ways, it felt like a different character, but in the analysis of it here, I think the glove fits still. Do you guys agree that everything we've talked about here kind of led to that? And even though it felt kind of sharp in the way it was turned, it made sense, and it was valid in the Succession/Civil War arc.
Yeah, kind of breaking both. Sorry, if you want to go first.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I think kind of breaking both ways. Like, yes, I think by Extinction they knew where she was. Obviously, they knew where she was going, and they knew leading into it. But also, Extinction just had a different writer than Legacy of Zamrak did for whatever real life matters in our assessment. Yeah. It does feel different because I don't think Shrike's written for Moya since Extinction. And also maybe just like the midway point of Moya transitioning from Zamorakians, where we're kind of working with them in Elder God Wars, and then going into they're going to be the faction is going to be the de facto antagonist forward. Maybe that just caught people the right way in Extinction. But I think it was it doesn't not make sense. Sorry, Zerzarlins, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I was going to say I think. Having gone through all the analysis, I think I somewhat agree with you, Shane, that it's not completely out of left field, which is a kind of a it's an evolution from where I started this conversation.
And it's an evolution for, most people who did Extinction, I would say.
I think it runs into the problem that we have with a lot of character development in RuneScape, which is there's a lot that happens off screen. There's a lot of stuff that we just don't see. And like Sarah Doman got hit with this real bad where he has like he spent most of the Sixth Age being just absolutely irredeemably awful. And then he has this redemption arc that we only see about 30% of. Mm-hmm. And so that leads it to sort of not landing well with a lot of people because it doesn't feel organic. It feels very stilted. Because of the way RuneScape tells stories and how quest
the rate of content.
Yeah. So I think it does work. I think her character evolution between Extinction and Legacy of Zamorak makes sense. I think it would have worked better if we'd been able to spend more time with her. But I realize for practical reasons that isn't how it was going to happen, but
you can't necessarily do that. And you have to, of course, look at what the story they were trying to tell was in that Civil War arc, in that it was the aftermath of Zamorak being gone. And what happens when you remove such a powerful figure? Well, it's going to, descend to fighting in the wilderness. And it's going to be a question of, well, guys, who's going to win? And, based on the characters we had at the point and what was going on, with the forces at the time, obviously Bilrock's forces did end up winning that. And Moya being close to Bilrock kind of, I think, probably telegraphed why Bilrock won and that Moya was going to be that central figure, going forward, even even beyond Succession on that. And in the Succession quest itself, the thing I always go back to is just that night and day difference, the final cutscene of the quest with the song that shows the differences in the Sarah Dominist, you know, I don't want to say empire, but the Sarah Dominist side in Falador and the Zamorakians in the wilderness, and that, you know, the Sarah Dominist are celebrating their perceived win over, you know, the forces that were going to be coming in from the wilderness. Meanwhile, it's at least heavily implied that there's some form of an execution or something going on the Zamorakian side, and you get this really stark different storytelling in the way they ping pong back and forth in that quest cutscene. And, you know, that in effect really sums up for me the Civil War storyline and the culmination of Moya as the what's next factor in this, because, you know, recall, we didn't even really see Adrastea that much after Succession.
No, it's a good writing trick, because functionally Adrastea and Moya are Sarah Dominist and Zamorak. They fill basically the same narrative role.
Yeah.
But they don't have, like, they're both effectively blank slate characters. Adrastea literally, because she wasn't a character until Extinction, so she could be written to be literally anything. And Moya, because she, prior to Extinction, she was basically a lamp. She was a plot device more than a character, as we said. So they don't have the same character baggage as Sarah Dominist and Zamorak.
Right.
So you can have that. You can have that status quo of Sarah Dominist's good, Zamorakians bad, which is where the game is going, as much as some people wish it wouldn't. And you can have that without also having to deal with Sarah Dominist and Zamorak being discrete or being continuous characters with how they were in the Sixth Age.
You just hit the nail on the head there with that, in terms of what's happening right now with the story, I think.
Yeah.
Because they could go further on this, and they could tell different stories, but they're, again, they retold the Sarah Dominist versus Zamorak story with these two characters, as they probably wanted it to go off in the Sixth Age, but of course everybody at the time portrayed Sarah Dominist good, Zamorak evil, and of course the gods overshadowed everything. Hence this was, you know, the big reset button.
Yeah.
So
additionally, now you have characters who can't just solve their problems by being a god with snap
right, yeah, that's the other thing. They don't have the omnipotent powers. Not omnipotent, but
which makes the player more important.
Yes.
Much to the chagrin of many people. Much to the chagrin of many people with, you know, gods being gone. I don't know if it's many, but I know I've run up against people who would rather be, you know, still working with the gods rather than these characters. Where do you guys land on that?
It's a not uncommon sentiment.
I get it. I mean, the amount of timeline shenanigans that had to be going on during the Sixth Age, be like, oh, we got to put like disclaimers in all these quests that the gods are back now, or like the status quo was so shooken up by that it made it really hard to not to like, then the requirements, quest requirements argument starts coming up way harder and things like that, where now we're like, we're more at a state that like, it doesn't matter if you've done, I don't even know what quest, like Wagath the Sleep Rich Ritual, the Majorat quest. It's like nothing's really changed since then. Like you can have the same world be the same world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I miss the gods in the sense that I liked many of them as characters, but I think like narratively they didn't work with the game. They introduced too many problems to the storytelling.
Yeah, and like the thing that I always ran into, and the way I liked it better than just having, you know, the Sarah Dominist and Zamorak side, was when we, you know, got to the you know, extra galactic stuff. I found that stuff interesting, but I don't think that's very RuneScape-y, right?
It's not
aliens. It's not. Well, starts as soon as you start pointing, everything's an alien.
That's weird. Yeah.
Time travel,
and that's why people that's why people aliens love their Zautak, right? And yeah. Zaros,
yeah.
So, but, you know, to bring this back to Moya inside the Legacy of Zamorak and Succession arc, mm-hmm. The depth continues because you also, you know, see a bit of tension there between her and Bilrog calling out the Zamorakians for not innovating, for example.
Yeah, I think that going back to at least like Twilight of the Gods, I was surprised they brought Bilrog back at all, because I feel like he was pretty footnote at that point. But bringing him back in Twilight of the Gods obviously set him up for Moya to have something to do to overcome in Legacy of Zamorak.
I think they
being
needed...
like that old deep lore Zamorakian, that the new age Zamorakian is going to come in and be like, no, we're doing it this way.
Right. Well, I think he makes sense to bring back for a couple of reasons. First off, because even if it's not really done narratively super well, it has been established that it's been established in lore that he was high up in Zamorak's organization. But also, like, from a symbolic standpoint, who are the two main factions you associate with Zamorak? Demons mm-hmm. and Majorat. So who is the Civil War? Krill and Bilrog.
Yes.
You could have done Zemo there too, but you can't believably have Zemo leading
a
Civil War faction.
Are we respecting him as a leader?
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't matter. You can't have that.
Yeah, and we all know, you know, and, you know, just now that you're mentioning that, we know that story's not done, because remember, we're storing Zemo apparently in our brig that we didn't know we had in Fort Forrester.
We got Zemo in the cellar.
That's going to come back probably sooner than we think.
But anything else on the Legacy of Zamorak Succession season before we look at the Fort 4 and 3 stuff? Because I think we've covered most of...
I think that, closing words on Legacy of Zamorak, I think that, like Extinction, we will realize in time just how many plates they were trying to spin to put so many things in the place that it's like, okay, they were... For however it was received, and maybe there should have been just like, okay, we're going to take part of 2023 to tell more or whatever... They were trying to get pieces into place, and there was a lot going on in every little mini quest, like between Vengeance and Jared and whatever. It's gonna be like a lot's going to trace back to that, I think, in the future.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right. And then, of course, we get to everybody's most recent, you know, memories of this character, Moya, in the Battle of 4 and 3. Series, and you know, she was even in the cutscene as we ended that in November, and it's very clear at this point in time. And I don't know, I said de facto leader of the Zamorakian forces, but she has a title of Imperator. Do we feel that it's still de facto, or is that she's actually the leader of the Zamorakian forces?
I think she's gotten everyone to recognize her.
She's definitely leader of the largest Zamorakian faction. Mm-hmm. Zamorakians being Zamorakians, it's entirely possible that
they might not believe in factions or leaders.
Yeah.
It's whoever can slither up and survive to the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but we may also see, like, maybe the Black Knights say, no, screw you, we're going to do our own
thing.
Sure,
they have not actually been in Legacy of Zamorak or 4-4-3 style line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will also point out that during the interrogation with Zemmerigal in Battle of 4-3, he does mention her twice, once as the usurper, so maybe not everyone's respect, but also he says when Moya finishes ... So he is privy to her plan, so he's in the circle, but
how is that the case?
Because Zemo is a worm.
He's biding his time in the faction that's got power for now. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just going along with whatever will keep him from keep everyone from realizing how useless he is.
Basically. It's kind of both, but that's probably always a tension in the Zamorakian faction. They're probably always like vying for top spot or power or something like that. They're not very loyal, I don't think.
And, you know, there's also the fact that in Battle of 4 and 3, we know that Moya cares for the Majorant. We know that she has also resurrected Bilrock here. And when you start teeing all these things up together, are you guys seeing what I'm seeing here? In that...
She might just be the future of their race.
Yes.
Just might.
Yes, but also it feels like this is a huge kind of reset for the way the Majorant story could have went, in that now we're finally seeing what might have happened without God's back prior to 2013, and now we're seeing one of these directions. And I feel like it's a very different direction than what we were talking about at the end of the saga and at the end of Ritual of the Majorant, but it's definitely a path that probably, you know, could have been taken. There could have been a civil war, and this could have been the same way it ended up. And that's my, you know, whole grand conspiracy theory of the modern era of RuneScape writing, is that they were looking for, you know, a big reset button, a way to get rid of the gods, a way, in effect, to say the Sixth Age was, you know, a fun distraction and diversion from 2013 until 2022, where we had gods on the world and, you know, we played in their playground, but now we're going back to how things were before, how things would have been, and everything that we've seen with Battle of 4 and 3, Zemmerigal, you name it, was something that probably could have happened prior to the World Wakes. That's my grand conspiracy theory inside all Jessica related things.
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
Which is, in some arguments about Legacy Zamorak and the Age of Chaos and stuff like that, it's been said that the Sixth Age has been, quote-unquote, erased. Do you feel like the current content of the past year and a half, or however long since, like, Twilight, it's respected? Does the Sixth Age feel gone, or does it feel like that was a chapter?
It depends on your character and when you started playing. Because if you just started playing, you know, with Fresh Start Worlds and you left when EOC came out, Sixth Age might as well not exist for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could pick up, you know, you could... Janice and I talked about this with the last membership deal. You played Fresh Start, you put it down after that, you come back with this membership deal at Christmas or Premier Club. You do the Battle of 4 and 3, you know, quests back to back to back. What's changed? Do you need the Sixth Age? No, you don't. Yeah, you get, you know, lots of fun stories with Sintistan and archaeology and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But do you need it to make sense of what's going on right now in Fort 4 and 3? No.
And that was definitely probably a big narrative goal, is that they can get to a point where something like a Fresh Start, playing modern content, makes more sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that, you know, who is going to, in effect, shepherd the Zamorakian side forward without a god? Oh, it's Moya.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been since the very beginning. And in many ways, this is one thing that RS3 is doing similar to old school, is that they're now telling these sorts of stories in terms of still displaying Zamorakian ideals, without needing Zamorak on the playing field, if that makes sense. And that's how old school wants to do it as well. And maybe we're for the better for that. Maybe we're not. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of going back to RS2 storytelling, because it's going back to the gods being philosophical ideas rather than active agents.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
I guess the difference is that what Zamorak stands for has kind of evolved.
Mm-hmm. 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 For fairness, you do learn that in Dishonor Among Thieves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So maybe the Sixth Age is still kind of needed for that, if you kind of want to, you know, read the chapter on that. But it's not, you know, a prerequisite as it was. And you still get Moya to this place, I think, just by looking at what's happening with Succession on that. So, do we want to, you know, kind of dip our toes into the field of speculation about, you know, what's happening next year?
And be so very wrong.
I mean, that's why I asked, wrong. Because we tried it with Zemmerigal and we were wrong.
I don't mind. I would like someone else to go first, though.
I have no idea. So it's going to be Zerdodes first.
Okay.
All right. I'll bite. I mean, like, the logical place for them to go next, because they've teased it, is Moya is going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of don't think they're going to do that. Just because I feel like it's almost too obvious. Okay. I don't know. I don't really have a good reason for it, but...
Gut feeling?
Yeah, just my gut feels that I don't... I think they're going to go a different way on it, but...
What to me, it has to be a tie into necromancy more than just, you know, having Zamariel in the cellar.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to tie necromancy in a little bit more, because is just kind of off in the ether right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, they've set up a lot of threads. They've got a lot of plates spinning. Mm-hmm. One that I really wanted them to do, I think I mentioned this back during the episodes that we made during Legacy of Zamorak, is they sort of tease the werewolves going to war against the vampires in Caniphus.
Yes.
And that I'd love to see.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, because the Caniphus storyline has been pretty much done since we finished the Myrek stuff over there.
Yeah, we've revisited it very briefly in Asenadra's quest.
The two guards.
The two guards that were added with Asenadra's quest, and a little bit with Vanescula through archaeology as the dig site manager. But yeah, it's basically been unchanged. It's basically been untouched ever since Blood Runs Deep. Which is River firmly blood, Fifth Age.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Blood Runes Deep, that's the Fremenic one. Sorry.
Different Fifth Age blood.
Different Fifth Age blood. It is very late. So
no, it's yeah. Oh, totally fine.
Crack theory, I want to see... I'm recalling some conversations I had last year about this. Crack theory, I would love to see Moya... pulling us into court and charging us rent for living in Ferinthry.
Ooh, that'd be a great new
landlord
case
balls
batch.
Off.
Okay, fair enough.
Not going to happen.
No. Very wilderness. Do they believe in landlords?
I mean, I think they would believe in landlords if it
if they believe
us
in
over
charging
somehow.
Money. Yes. My theory as far as this year would be yes, I think that purple Bill Rock matters. I feel like that's you tease that there yeah. at the end of the quest because that's your cliffhanger going forward. I don't think we're going to be dealing with Moya super directly. Yeah, I think that maybe purple Bill Rock might fill the same role that Zamariel filled for this past arc.
Oh, that's interesting. So kind of just something in the background.
A thrall or something.
Yeah.
I think that Moya...
The soldier that Moya sends out after us.
I think that Moya and Adraste are here for the long term, not the short term. And then I think that I think Zamariel in the cell is something that's going to be paid off sometime this year. I think that Vorkath being noted as missing... and not being killed in the boss fight will be something that's relevant this year. I think that anything that it left open specifically will be this year somehow in some plot that has to do with the Raptor and Mislin. So those are generally... I'm not going to go more specific than
no,
that.
No, of course.
Wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, with that, you still have the Moya thread that, of course, runs through all that. And, mm-hmm. you know, you get to what I see with this... is that, and we already answered this, is that now what we're seeing is that RS3 is bringing forward the god philosophies or their lore angles or their beats, as if you could call it, now through the god's followers and their actions and their interpretations mm-hmm. of what Zamorakianism is in the case of Moya, rather than just having the god do the thing themselves like they did in the Sixth Age, which probably works out for the better now that we think about it. Of course,
it's very freeing from a writing standpoint because it lets you sort of play with characters' actions and beliefs a little bit more. Like you can have lots of different people who have different interpretations of what Zamorakianism is, But if you have Zamorak doing a thing, it has to be Zamorakianism because, like, by definition.
Yes.
And in many ways, it's more fun to talk about, you know, the way they're doing that and what the angle might be rather than just seeing him do it, if that makes sense. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's probably for the better. And I always have this, you know, thing bouncing around in my head, and it's something that I would like to work into a podcast at some point or another. I don't know if I'd have to look back at what we did on the Sixth Age stuff monthly bit-wise, but I always feel like I need to ask this question out and about and maybe do a show on it at some point. Is that, you know, now that we have the Sixth Age thoroughly in the back mirror, mm-hmm. should it have went that way? And what would the road not taken look like? Moya's involvement included in that. So.
What the road not taken looks like is a very hard question.
What does the sequel to Ritual the Maj'rat look like?
Yeah, and that's partially why, you know, we don't do those things that often, is because they're just so hard to do, in that we don't have the knowledge of, you know, like a Mott Raven or what have you available to say what that would be. So, but
yeah, we were talking about this over lunch one day, and it would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If only. But that pretty much does it on the Moya front. Anybody else have any Moya thoughts? Anything that we should mention before we go?
Any Moya thoughts?
Any Moya thoughts?
I like it.
Not intended.
But it happened. We were all here for it.
We were.
Should have just taken the W, man.
All right, we do have a few achievements this week. We have Mej Quest with 99 crafting on the 13th, Drama Free with 99 necromancy on the 10th, as well as Mood Dragon X with 99 necromancy on the 10th as well, and Psyoace's got 120 prayer also on the 10th. You can see people taking a rest from double XPing after that. But Tennis, pick of the week, and you're going to have to explain this one.
Oh, yeah.
Because I pulled this up, and I was like, you are suggesting a game here that has an overwhelmingly negative review on Steam.
I'm 100% doing that, and I've actually watched that get worse and worse as the day has went on, because it just unlocked this morning, right? And I first thought it was mixed, and now we're all the way down to overwhelmingly negative. Okay. 20 years ago, a little game called Star Wars Battlefront came out, and this is the original, the PS2 era Star Wars Battlefront. Everyone loved it. When the new Battlefronts came out, everyone was like pretty disappointed because it didn't measure up to the classics. And they released a remaster of the classic collection today. And unfortunately, apparently the multiplayer servers are just... It's not good. It's bad. It's real bad. Hence, overwhelmingly
negative. Well, to be fair, day one, right? So, right. And see, that's the thing always for me, is that is it really fair to punish a game dev in such negative reviews on a day one for something like this, if your game is just, you know, drawing so many people in that you can't keep the servers up, or, you know, you're dealing with the other idea in that it's running on a tin can and the server performance is going to be horrid, even if, you know, you just got a small group of people on it.
Yeah, and that seems to be part of the collective
anxiety. People think it's just a... It's just bad servers, then, is what people think, with small number of people.
Well, it was only two to start with. And then, I guess, when more opened up, it didn't get much better.
Okay. So tell us about the gameplay and what exactly why we're doing this as a pick of the week, then.
Well, the reason I'm picking it is because I'm someone that kind of says... multiplayer because I'm going to get shot in the head anyway, and that's not really fun. So I play a lot of the single player and the campaign mode and the Galactic Conquest, which is one of the things that made the original classics just so good. And that experience is wonderful. It's just as good as it was, with a few extra, you know, a few extra things. There's some more heroes in Battlefront 2 that weren't there before, like Mace Windu and Asajj Ventress, and I think Kit Fisto is in there. I don't know. Some people that weren't there before. There's a few more, you know, maps that weren't there before. Some very minor, you know, additions. But it just, you know, it just looks nice playing on a modern computer now.
Right. So. Yeah. And is it remastered or is it exactly the same graphics that it was?
They call it remastered, but I mean, it looks... I don't know. It plays just like it used to. It probably looks better, but...
So what I'm betting they probably did then, if it, like, I'm looking at the screenshots right now, and they do look like it would have been, like it would be from that 2004 era. So what I'm betting that they just did is that they increased the resolution on all the textures and models and whatnot to be acceptable for how we view things in 2024 would be my guess, is what they mean by remastered.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It looks like those nice chunky 2004 era graphics polygons, and it's done by Aspyr, so not a huge studio, so they're probably not building from the ground up.
Yeah, that would make sense on that. And I mean, and see, that's what I said, is that you always need to have some sort of, you know, explanation behind what the overwhelmingly negative review is. But if you're doing this for just single player, sure, fine, have at it. But I do know people as well for whom the Battlefront games back in the day, you know, was, you know, one of those things that you would, you know, just kind of move to a bit if you were, you know, done with Counter-Strike or Half-Life 2 Deathmatch. And you wanted, you know, just a different change of pace. So I can totally see, and I understand why the gamers from that generation would be rating that as overwhelmingly negative for that if the servers aren't working on day one, just because it's like it's like saying, hey guys, we're bringing back a remodeled or a remastered version of Counter-Strike 1.7 with, you know, up to date graphics and whatnot, here, have at it, and then the servers quit. You would have the exact same response to that.
Yeah, I would have felt the same way if the single player had been trash, right? Like, I would have been like, great, what am I supposed to do with this? All I have is multiplayer. I can't, you know, that's not fun. You know, I mean, it would have been the same way if the situation was reversed, but like you said, Shane, I'm hopeful that, give them a little bit of time. Like, I don't know how on earth they didn't anticipate this being as popular and as big as what has turned out to be. That being said, now they know, come on guys. You know, like, this has the potential, I think, to like this could it's gonna dwarf the modern Battlefront player numbers, I'm sure, if they can get it working right. Like, everybody would be playing this.
Yeah. And you know, I just check the daily and weekly Steam charts for this, and it's not in the top 100. So I have a feeling the reason it's getting that overwhelmingly negative is that it's just being hit by a very diehard player base on that. So
yeah.
Skimming the reviews, it looks like a lot of the negativity is just because they can't get on the multiplayer to play because there's not enough servers. Which is fair.
And then, you know, that's gonna improve over time and whatnot. So I mean,
if you're like me, if you're just into getting into classic, the cool thing about Battlefront, you know, these classic Battlefronts is you could drive anything. You could do anything. Like, you know, it's pretty badass to jump in an AT-AT and just start raining death down, right? Like, it's great.
And that's the important bit. That's what makes it your pick of the week. So
yeah,
right on with that. All right, what have we been doing on RS? Zerdones, what have you been up to this week?
Honestly, not very much. Just kind of biding my time, waiting for the Easter event. I've mostly been playing Middle Earth Shadow of War.
Ooh, that's a good game.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm in the middle section now, and it kind of bloats a bit. It's got a lot of threads, got a lot of plates spinning. It's kind of hard to know what to do, but
that's really fair. I don't think I've ever made it through the actual storyline, but
yeah, I mean, just playing around with the orcs is
yeah, fun. I've snuck up on a lot of orcs.
Yeah, the orcs are a lot of fun to play with.
Nice. How about you, Avernick?
Sort of same as Zerdones. Not much lately. I feel like after double XP week, I haven't played much, but Easter event will almost definitely get me back on. We'll see how long.
Yeah, and see, like we said, at the top of the show, that's going to be the interesting thing to mention with this is that, well, here we are, Easter's on the way. We'll be talking about that next week, the live stream and whatnot, and see how that copies in the mold of Christmas. But as for me, I did take advantage of the PVM week last week. And no meaningful progress on that Razio log. We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to leave that there as that number inches closer and closer to 1,000. But I did get to the point where, by design and with intention, I have managed to lightning skip on all three phases of hard mode care pack.
Ooh, nice.
Damn. Which, of course, is a big deal, because if you can, you know, get to that mechanic, that means you're putting out a huge amount of DPS and you can start doing the boss repetitively and start seeing benefits from it, and in that it becomes a positive over a negative. So I use the remaining few hours of the buff on Sunday's double XP time, the Thok event, to make that happen. So yeah. that was quite fun and enjoyable, and I feel like I'm at the point where I can probably go back and, you know, just do that. If I feel like, you know, I'm up for an hour of PVM, I can just hop on and go care pack hard mode, and I don't need to worry about, you know, the death costs or anything with that, and that it's going to be reasonably well successful and I'm not going to die too much. So that was my learning experience this time, and, you know, we'll refine that further next time and also maybe throw in another boss down the road with that. But that's what I've been up to on the RS3 front. Lots and lots of PVM with that, which is weird because I don't think I would have ever said that. Hence why you should go and listen to our most recent monthly bit. But Tannis, what have you been up to?
Killing. That's for, you know, what I do. Piddles and skilling. Slowly ticking away wood cutting, and
where are we at with that now? Post Imkando hatchet, post, you know, XP rebalance last summer. Where are we at with that? Like, where are we at in terms of, you know, what's the best to do if you're going for 120? Is it still the golden bamboo or elders crystals?
That's the problem. Like, they're all. I feel like, so I'm doing elders, but nothing is like stand out head and shoulder above the others, right? Like, so I've had a lot of trouble kind of deciding which route I would go, and I'm like, well, I'll just do elders, because I'll end up with the logs. But,
yeah, and which so, you can I mean, sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or exactly. If you know you were limited to an hour a day thereabouts, I'd say, you know, just go do bamboo, but I don't necessarily know how
that balances
out. I think
golden bamboo is still the best, but it is a limited resource.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Which would make sense, because it'd be really bad if that if that update came out and, you know, they didn't do that. So
you can't harm the Ark.
No, and yeah, which of course is your baby, right?
Oh yes.
But that's interesting. The wiki now has a section on training to 200 mil wood cutting.
Really?
It says the most efficient way to train from max level to 200 mil is to use crystallize and light form while chopping mahogany trees in the Kazari jungle. This yields 468,000 woodcutting XP per hour.
Crystallized mahogany.
Right, because your success rate is so high.
I wonder, is there a reason?
It used to be crystallized Acadia, now it's crystallized mahogany.
Cool. Just from the rebalance.
And, you know, with that XP rate, that's actually not too bad.
I don't want to go to the jungle, though. Can I go to, like, the little mahogany pen?
The jungle has the highest density.
The jungle probably has the highest, you know, collection of trees. But, I mean, you've done Legends quests, so why not?
I don't like the jungle.
It's aggressive things. I don't know if they go down there.
Yeah, but I don't know. Interesting, nonetheless. Maybe that's something we need to look at going forward on this, and, you know, just where that has landed post Imcando and whatnot. But anyways, before we start another deep dive episode here, I will say, reminder to subscribe to the podcast if you want it delivered automatically to you. We're on all the podcast listening services out there. We're on Apple, which now has transcriptions, Spotify, which has already had transcriptions. I looked that up today. And of course, Pocket Cast as well. update.show/subscribe. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Please do give the show a like and subscribe there, even if you listen on audio. Greatly helps the podcast out. But we'll be back next week to talk about Easter. So thank you, Zerdones and Avernick, for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm always happy to be here.
Yeah, it was fun to talk about lore and, you know, figure out what exactly is up with one of our characters in-game. Tanis, anything else before we go?
That's it for me.
Alrighty then. Well, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya. Bye.